We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Now, I guess before talking UFOs, what I've been interested in, because I am a fan of the show, and I see Chris mixed up in UFOs a lot on social media, but Marie is kind of doesn't, Chris is becoming sort of a character in UFO world, which I'm trying to advise you against. But Marie, I always kind of wonder, like, I see Chris, it's like, he'll be chiming in on UFOs or going on some other show, and I'm like, does Marie know you're doing this? Does Marie know you're mixed up with these people, Chris? Like, I always feel like it's like this, like, secret double life of the show, because it never seems to kind of come up that Chris is moonlighting as a UFO character. So, what's your take on, not so much that, I'm kind of but just busting Chris's chops, but I guess this crazy scene that you know, your buddy Cogs kind of dips his toe in from now and again.
Well, first of all, gets the show in now and again. Well, first of all, like, I gotta say, you know, and this isn't blowing sunshine up Chris's ass, but he is one of the smartest guys that I've met. Like, he is legit smart. And so when he applies his knowledge to something, or when he is, like, questioning something, you know, I'm like, oh, I pay attention to it. Because, again, like, I think he thinks about things in a certain way. He asks questions, and he's really smart about stuff. And he's got this interest in UFOs. So I think whenever he's gone into some kind of, you know, subgenre within the UFO community, or has been, you know, trying to, you know, work within that, I've always felt like, well, he's taking his scientific knowledge, he's taking who he is as a person and as a scientist, and trying to apply that to find out what the hell's really going on. Like, Marie Mayhew, you know, what do I think about UFOs, or what do I know about them? Like, I don't know, man, maybe. Weirder things have happened. But I think that you really have to be... you have to be able to think about things and engage people in a certain way to find out what's really happening. And I think that that's, again, like, the people that he's come into contact with, or that we've come into contact with, or that we've done episodes on around UFOs, again, like Robert Bigelow, to me are almost more fascinating than the idea of extraterrestrials. Because it's man, you have these people who are hugely invested in this idea, or these organizations that carry so much other baggage with them, or believe in certain things, and, you know, and get in their own way with this stuff sometimes. What's up with that? But Cogs, it's like, anytime that Cogs, first of all, I've got his back. I'm his Jay to the Silent Bob that is Cogs. So I am going to get his back no matter what. Whatever Twitter fight with any kind of wackadoodle he's going to find, I'm going to get his back on it. But I think that, you know, he always is thinking about that stuff. And he's always, you know, what's interesting is it's like, you know, like I said, I've never seen one. Cosmetes, you know, perhaps, right? And, like, we're both like, man, that would be cool. Like, I wonder what's up there. I wonder what's going on with that. But it's sort of like we've never dismissed it, or dismissed people that have had that experience. But at the same time, you know, I can say I haven't. And maybe that's why I'm in the position I'm in about talking about it, not experiencing it. I don't know. It is fascinating. And then I just kind of giggle because I'm like, oh, dang it. There he goes. He's on. He's, you know, he's put up some diatribe on Twitter.
I will say
we're going to get killed in the comments, but that's cool.
Yeah, I will. that's the one area where we it's funny. You can always tell when something I said on Twitter isn't popular, because the show will suddenly get a rash of one-star reviews. Like, I just don't like this guy's attitude. You know, like, all right, man. I get it. Like, you know, I said I didn't think that a little goatee was a good look. I understand. All right, I understand why you're not happy with me right now. It's fine. I will say that any time Yeah, no, I mean, I will say that anytime that I've, I guess, decided to get more involved or less involved or whatever, you know, one of the first people I talked to, I talked to my wife about it, I talked to Marie. You know what I mean? And usually the first thing my wife asks me is, what does Marie think? You know, because, I mean, it's really like it's a, you know, it's a weird, it's just a weird kind of field of, it's a weird field to be even just tangentially related to, you know, I mean, I don't really consider myself to be like, I consider myself almost more to be like an outside figure, I guess. And maybe that's hopeful on my part to say that I'm outside of the fray at this point still. But, you know, it's one of those weird things where, you know, I think you yourself can, you don't really get to decide what you're, you don't really get to decide in the area of like UFO stuff, how people see you anymore. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, you know, you know, like it's such a weird thing because it's such a, it sounds crazy to even talk about how like it's like the dumbest B-level fame ever. It's like having a group of like 3,000 people really intensely interested in what you say at all times. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
UFO famous.
You know, it's enough I think of a taste of like that kind of level of like notoriety or importance or whatever that you're like, man, I write one dumb tweet and I've got like 100 people on Twitter retweeting it and being like, screw this guy, he doesn't know whatever, and there's people like, you know, troll farms getting ready to come after us and whatever. That is intense and kind of crazy, you know? And
yeah.
It's but again, like you have no control over that. You know what I mean? So it's sort of
right,
a weird
right.
Like, you know, you wonder, I guess a lot of the times when people you know, I'll do like talks or interviews on this stuff or whatever, and people are like, well, what is the incentive for like somebody to lie about this stuff? And it's like, I don't know, man, not have the mob come after you because you're like suddenly person, you know, the enemy of UFO world. Like, you know, it sounds silly, but like, you know, your entire community starts, and again, it's not even my damn community, you know, but suddenly like this group of people who used to really support you start coming after you because you disagree with them. Like, you're going to find a way to agree with them. I think most people would.
I will say this. I will say, like, when and if Chris ever says, hey, you know what? I believe this and here's why. The fucking aliens exist. Like, then there's no, to me, there's no gray area.
Oh,
right?
I see what you're getting at.
Like,
all right.
For him to be like, yeah, these fucking things are real, then they have shown up at his house. And they have been like, okay, I'm going to change into a fish. I'm going to change into a bird. I'm a jar of jam. What? I'm a book. Whatever it's going to take for them to convince him in alien life, he's going to be convinced. And then I'm going to be like, yeah, you know what? You people out there that have been bitching about stuff, you should probably be convinced at this point, too, because it's conclusive. And that's
well,
really,
that raises,
to me, it's like, yeah.
That raises an interesting point, just pivot off of this in a sense, but also would stay within the realm of UFOs. It's like a lot of what some of these people who claim they have secrets say is it's often stuff they've just been told, and it's like mm-hmm. that they've been told by an appeal. What is that, like an appeal to authority or something? You know, it's like they And it's like, well, this guy in the CIA took me aside and said this, and it's like then they're an absolute believer and stuff. It's like, I would love to know. I don't think anyone who claims that they know anything, any insights, who's actually seen anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't think they ever actually have seen a fucking alien. It's just like I was told. Well, we've been told. You know, this guy took me aside and said this, and you know, I can't tell you what it is, but. There's a lot of that, and not a lot of people, I don't think, that have actually seen an alien. You know, I'm talking about, like, quote-unquote insiders.
Yeah, no, you would think at this point that, like, after, you know, I mean, I remember being at school and having kids tell me that, like, you know, their uncle works for Nintendo, right? And being like, no, he doesn't. Like, no, I'm telling you, man, there's going to be a blue Pikachu. It's called Pikachu. You know, like, that, That's like the,
shut
it's
up,
the
man.
Same
so
thing.
I am still waiting for Pika Blue.
It's literally, but it really is. It's the same thing, you know? And we, again, touch on it a lot in the show, that, you know, conspiracy theory and all of these sorts of stories like this, they spread in really well-trod ways. Like, the mechanisms that they use to get around are pretty common. And so that idea of, like, the appeal to authority and the appeal to, like, no, but just trust me, and, like, spreading a story through, like, a trusted person, it's really important. It's, like, more important than what you say, even. You know, I mean, we know that now with even the we know it now. We see it now even with the pandemic that, you know, if it doesn't really matter if it doesn't really matter what the science data tells you. What matters is who's telling you, right? So it's like if a family doctor is asking you to get vaccinated and explaining to you why it's important, you are more likely to trust them than if, like, a random nameless person on TV is talking down to you about it, you know? And so it's kind of a similar thing. Like, you know, if, you know, there's no way that any of those people have seen anything. And the best way to know that they haven't seen anything is that they are still talking about it, you know, like it's not, you know, and that's something I do think is very, very interesting. You know, I mean, the older I've gotten, the more I've been kind of involved in any of these fields of, like, you know, conspiracies, pseudoscience, whatever, you know, light is the best disinfectant. And so, you know, if those, like, people or those figures want to be taken seriously as, like, government insiders or people that people should trust with information like this or whatever, they kind of, you know, you need to put up or shut up eventually. And I think for a lot of people, like, UFOs are an interesting thing that a lot of people kind of partially believe in. But I think, again, like, the sort of rabid, like, online talk about them that we see, and it's not everywhere. I mean, you know, I know a lot of people that think about UFOs and talk about them, and it's great. It's a lot of fun talking to them, you know? But I think the kind of, like, you know, I think the sort of semi-radical, like, online bubble that we see, yeah, is it is a lot more not bubble, but, like, it's more of an echo chamber than I think they realize. You know, they think that, like, the stories on TV or whatever are really significantly moving the needle. And, for example, like, the evidence they use to point out that it's moving the needle is, like, oh, you know, the Galileo Project is real scientists studying this stuff. And then the Galileo Project hires, like, the same UFO talking heads as everywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, is it new people then? Or is it, like, the same people that have just kind of, like, gotten to, like, one new person and now is leveraging that person's credentials for their own gain? You know? And, I mean, part of that, it's like, that's just how you grow a movement, right? So, like, part of it, that's just the way that those things happen.
Money.
Yeah, it's just the way you make money. It's the way you make connections. But at the same time, it is an interesting thing. You know, it's a like a lot of fabricated controversies or a lot of fabricated stories in many ways, you know, there's like a couple people with really dedicated social media work can change a lot of information very quickly, very easily. You know, there's a reason that, like, you know, 20 guys in a basement in St. Petersburg are basically able to, like, change the tide right now for Ukraine. You know what I mean? Because they're able to, like, send the right or the wrong propaganda out. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Propaganda is powerful, man. Like, we act like it isn't, but propaganda is powerful, and humans have never been able to send out their own propaganda before in this same kind of way as social media. You know?
Yeah, this social media has changed a whole bunch of...
Yeah. Yeah, it's
crazy. A whole bunch of stuff.
You know, I think like, the honestly, it's crazy, but, like, I don't know if you get this in, like, the world of, like, you know, internet, like, radio or whatever, but, like, in the podcasting realm, I think, honestly, the biggest, like, example of this, and honestly, it kind of comes down to, again, a lot of these UFO people, like, someone they I think they follow very closely, even if they may not, you know, agree with every crazy thing the person said. But, like, L. Ron Hubbard, right, like, fake it till you make it. That kind of idea of, you know, the narrative is more important than the truth, right? Like, you know, just saying you're successful is enough to make you seem successful. You know, go on to a Facebook group about, like, podcasting, and every day there's somebody like, well, how do I get to 1,000 listeners or whatever? And there is a no-name person being like, I'm a podcast consultant. I'll get you to 1,000 listeners. You know, that's, like, it, you know, people are trying to scam you all the damn time, man. Like, it's not just in the world of UFOs so or the paranormal or whatever. Yeah,
people, so much of it, like, it's about
exactly
being able to make a dime off of it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do ask Marie if I should.
And I'm Laura, and yeah, I'm just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, I didn't want to get too deep
into
it.
Have fun. Don't join a cult.
Into the, yeah, exactly. Well, that's why I keep an eye on you in the UFO realm, Cogs. My only word of caution is that I always say, if you get mixed up in the UFO circus, after a while you just end up as one of the clowns. So it just seems like everybody who, you know, makes it like their full time, I'm a UFO expert kind of thing. Now you guys did a show on time travel. Go ahead, Marie.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. I'm trying to. I'm not the greatest at these three guest shows, but I'm two guests and me, so I try my best. And we have a little crosstalk, but I think we're doing all right with Marie's phone.
Oh, we're doing great. I think we're doing great.
We're doing awesome. So you guys did a show on time travel. Now, I do kind of like Marie was joking about where I was giving Marie grief about the thing where it's like, sort of stoner questions, but, like, do we know – I kind of keep it very basic. Do we know where – like, when people first started talking about time travel? Like, when did this first come up? Do we know that?
Yeah, like, when the first, like, idea of time travel is, like, a narrative – so, yeah, we do. So time travel is, like, a narrative – time travel is a concept, I guess – really goes back to mythology in many ways. You know, I mean, if we look at, say, like, even in the Bible, right, the book of Revelation is a time travel story, right, because it shows the end of the world. So it shows time in the future that someone is being able to see.
That's true, yeah.
A lot of early versions of time travel stories talk about being able to see the future but not travel through it. Yeah. So it's like it's an important difference in that, you know, you can't change anything. You can't really go back to the past and change things, but you can see what is happening in the future and maybe see past events as well, but it's limited to like a vision of the past. The idea of like traveling to the past kind of comes about with the idea of time. It kind of changes the way we view time. Like, we view time as like a place, as opposed to just as a state of being. It's a hard difference in explaining it,
okay.
But it's kind of like, I don't know if anyone else remembers when you were a kid, like the first time that you were able to really cross like the major road or street in your area on your own, you know.
Yeah.
Or even like the first time you got a driver's license, the first time you drove anywhere yourself or got a bike. For me, that was like the first time that I really thought about my neighborhood and my environment around me as like a map, right? Like an area where the school is this far away and everything else. And it's kind of the same shift in thinking that happens to time, and it comes about with science and kind of scientific study, but like the first narrative use of time travel is around the time of the story of like Rip Van Winkle. There were some previous stories before, but really like Rip Van Winkle, and then actually the story that really puts it in the modern view more than anything is The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, but also interestingly A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. where, again, you're able to, like, travel, or, you know, Scrooge travels to the past and future to see what his life was like and what it will be like.
Yeah, some separate narrative, yep.
Yeah,
now,
so it's like, it's an idea to, like, the late 1700s, early to mid-1800s.
Okay. All right. Interesting. This is kind of an off-the-wall question, but, like, have you seen, are you aware, and I don't want to get into politics too much, but are you aware of, like, the old book that's, like, mentions, it's like a Barron Trump book that's, like, people think that it's, like, written, you know, with time travel somehow or something like that. Are you aware of this whole thing?
No. What?
Oh,
hold
no.
on.
Wait no, but a second. I need to hear everything immediately.
It raises time travel suspicions. That's probably the best way to put it. Let me see. I'll tell you the book name here. Let me see.
By Ingersoll Lockwood. The Travels and Adventures of Little Baron Trump and His Wonderful Dog, Bulger.
Yes, something like that. I don't know if that's the first book or what. Two children's
books. Oh,
my
God, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it's a whole thing where it's like there's all these, like, things that connect where it's like it's eerily informed or something like that. That might be the best way to put it. All right, down to, like, the character's name and stuff. So I guess that was kind of... if you haven't heard of the book, there's no, weird. It's kind of, I guess, what do you think of these ideas that like things, you know, that these ideas kind of get seeded in somehow?
Okay, wait, before Marie answers,
like,
I want to read.
It's like Ong's hat, though, right? I mean, Ong's hat
ahead, Marie,
and that
I'm
entire
sorry.
Phenomenon.
What's that?
Ong's hat and that entire phenomenon of. Like there's some area, I can't remember where it's based out of, but it's called Ong's Hat, and there's all of this literature around all this work that's been done in this one area, and it's a portal, right? So you go there and it has this entire backstory, and it's got all these references and all these other books that were kind of created in support of it, and it really comes down to, you know, you start to notice it. You start to notice coincidences the more you start to look.
Yeah.
And then the more you look for something, the more you're more apt to find it because you're looking for something. It's like the number 21, 17, whatever the big,
yeah, yeah.
you know, sort of the big things that you're supposed to trip into that you're finding, you know, like Canis or rabbits or any of the good podcasts that I've been listening to recently that lay heavily into that. And it's kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, if I look hard enough for coincidence, you know, or if I'm hyper aware of something or looking at something, I can associate to it. But is it really telling me about the, you know, is it really something from that sort of, you know, from the future, or is it something that I am really creating a narrative in my head? Because it's like it's very easy to do that. I think it's very like. Those are the things that are always the most interesting too, right? Because you start to pick up on patterns. You start to feel like you're decoding something, and it's like, oh, how much of that is really true versus how much of that is almost like an echo chamber for it to occur. Like, I haven't heard of this book, but oh hell yeah, now I'm fascinated by it, and I want to hear all about this. You know, because it's like, well, I want to read this. What is this? I don't even know what it's about.
Well,
it's like
funny.
About a little,
here, Marie,
a little. Okay, go ahead, Chris.
Okay, so here. Okay, so here's the. here is the art. This is from Wikipedia. The 2017 rediscovery. In July 2017, mm-hmm. the books were rediscovered by internet forum users and then by the media, who pointed out similarities between the protagonist and a certain U.S. president. Jamie Fuller wrote in Politico that Barron Trump is precocious, restless, and prone to get in trouble. He often mentions his massive brain and has a personalized insult for most people he meets. Fuller also notes that Barron Trump lives in a building named after himself, the Castle Trump. Furthermore, Barron obviously is Trump's youngest son. And then I guess that's the travels in the first book start in Russia. And then I guess the author Lockwood wrote another book called The Last President
in which New York City is riven by protests following the shocking victory of a populist candidate who brings on the downfall of the American. That's the one we should be looking into.
I know.
Forget the one
about
the little kid
one.
That goes underground and gets in trouble with women he, like, you know, with or whatever. Like, that's not the, you know. No, anyways. The thing, like Marie
when
said, right, there are probably.
Chris, when were these written?
These were written in the 1880s.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
spooky.
So
definitely spooky.
Well,
so
it's interesting, right? I guess what I'll say is this, right? I honestly do believe that I personally believe that history and kind of nature follows follows patterns, you know? History does, I think, follow patterns, and I think it's not because it is following the patterns. It's like Marie said, it's because we look for patterns, you know? And humans, you know, we like to think that we're so much more evolved than in, like, the 1800s. But basically, you know, we've been the same species for thousands of years, right? Millions of years. We're basically cavemen in pants, you know? So the stuff that makes us tick is the same that it's always ever been. And so the idea that, you know, sometimes the stories we tell come back around and look eerily similar, I think that's probably just because we're like, you know, we have the same monkey brains we always did. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Sometimes.
Well, I'm sure there's, yeah. I'm sure there's also other writings from that time that would be similar. Right? If you brought up some other story.
Yeah.
You could find.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, that's the other thing.
Parable from there.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too, is I guess the other part of it that's interesting is, like Marie said, number one, it's funny, in the Wikipedia article here it says that this book was, like, written as part of a swell of, like, children's fantasy novels after Alice's Adventures in Wonderland became popular in the United States. And so there's, like, probably thousands of books like this that just never became popular because caught on. You know what I mean? And this one never caught on either. This one would have been thrown away if a couple of states voted slightly differently. You know what I mean? So it's always easy to find patterns, you know? And again, like if this person really had a way to look into the future, or if we saw that like these sorts of things happened, it's like, I remember after 9/11 happened, you know, people were saying, like, you know, oh, some guy online found a machine that uses entropy to determine when giant, great catastrophes are going to happen. And it's like, oh, great. So then why didn't he warn anybody?
Yeah.
Like, that guy's a monster then, right? Like, he didn't warn a single person, but, hey, be careful. My machine is telling me that danger's close. You know what I mean? It's kind of the same thing with this. Like, if the only way that, you know, the only way that your fortune telling or their ability to look into the future comes forward is in books that are like a little bit seem like they're satirical, written in the modern day about a president. That's like a terrible, you know, I want a new superpower. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true.
That's a terrible superpower. Like, I just, you know, my stuff comes out in snarky BuzzFeed columns about look at how similar this book is to Donald Trump. Like, that sucks.
Yeah. Like, the only way he can warn the world is through a young adult fantasy book in the 1800s. It's like, how the fuck?
exactly.
That's not a very effective means of getting the message.
No, and that's when conspiracy starts to take over, right? Because then it's like, well, he had to say it this way because the Illuminati, you know, and this is like a silly example of that.
He's
but like
driven into the shadows, Chris.
Right.
Driven by persecution and had to get the message out. But it's also like, Chris, you said it was easy, and it may not be easy, but it is satisfying. To be able to make those connections and those narrative leaps is satisfying. And I think that's the other reason that people love to do that, right? Is like decoding something, even if there's nothing there to decode, to make meaning, is something that we crave and we love to be able to do. I think a certain mindset especially loves to be able to do it. Whether it's some kids book from the 1880s that may not have anything to do with anything or, you know, anything like that. If we can derive some narrative out of it to fit a pattern that makes sense to us, it's something that we love, people love doing.
Yeah. And that's the other, I guess the other part about it I'll say too is like, you know, what was a really popular like type of story, kind of historically and even still today really is, rich kid goes on adventures, right? Like think about like Richie Rich and those sorts of stories, right? I mean, you know, and the thing is too, like the parts of the Barron Trump book that are similar-ish to Donald Trump, I guess, if you look at them that way, you know, there also are loads of parts that aren't, right? Barron Trump goes underground to look at weird hidden civilizations. I don't think Donald Trump has ever been underground. I mean, on the subway, maybe.
Oh, yeah, the bunker.
You know what I mean?
Well,
like, you know, there's a lot of things in his book that
he hid in the bunker. When he hid in the bunker.
That's true. That's true, he did.
He hid in the bunker, and he called a bunch of important countries shithole countries. So really, where's
right, my apologies. The other part that's so funny about this, too, is, again, like, you know, the book that he wrote about, like, the American president taking down America, he said that would happen in 1898. You know what I mean? So, like, this guy, he's not batting 1,000.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. But it is interesting, though. I mean, it's still kind of a fun coincidence, you know?
Well, it's interesting, too. Talking about that made me think of, I think we're all kind of around the same age. It's kind of amazing, this thing that's come up, and it never was around before. It's kind of like what this Barron Trump story is, but different. And that's this whole Berenstain Bears thing, or the Mandela effect.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, where the fuck did that come from? Now it's a thing. It's like digital deja vu or something.
You know what's funny? There are things like that happen all the damn time, and you don't even
give it a
like,
second thought.
I swear I remember, like things, like, not just the Mandela effect and everything else, that's super duper interesting, right? But, like, there are things that I swear I remember. Like, did you ever have PB Crisps?
Yeah, I love PB Crisps. Yeah.
All right, yeah, so by the time that those, like, stopped being produced, I think I would have been, like, when did they stop being made, right?
Oh,
like,
shit, I don't know. Like, 20 years ago or something, I don't know. I was probably in high school-ish, I think.
Yeah. So, supposedly they were discontinued in, like, the 2000s-ish, right?
Okay.
But I remember those going, like, they're, like, things like that, like, I remember those going out of availability way, way, way earlier than that. You know what I mean? Because, like, you know, with the right door coming off, I'm sitting in the – I'm upstairs on my N64 with peanut butter on my lips, you know, scratching my neck, like, got any more PB Crisps, Dora? She's like, get away from there, spraying me with a water bottle.
She's like, no!
give me the crisps! You know, like, stuff – I don't know why I brought that up. I clearly want peanut butter. You know, but yeah, like the Berenstain Bears thing is very strange because that was one other Mandela effects things. Like they never really like hit me, you know, I was like, whatever. I never really had, I was too young to have any real thoughts about like Nelson Mandela. You know what I mean? Like I don't know if I would have known who he was until, you know, high school or whatever. So it's like, you know, that kind of stuff had never really hit me, but the Berenstain Bears one really got me, because I was like, that is not right. Like, I remember it being the Berenstain, or whatever, Berenstain Bears, you know?
Right.
But it just turns out that, like, I just wasn't a very good reader. And most people weren't, you know?
Remember. I mean, it comes back down faulty human memory. It's like, how you can influence memory one way or the other. It's like, you know, you did remember it one way, but I think that that's like the whole Mandela effect to me is like a real interesting, it's just an interesting exercise in like human memory and consciousness kind of in general. It's like, well, if you think it's this way, it might as well be that way because that's how you remember it, but that may not be even close to what it was in reality. Right.
Yeah,
if it was spelled differently
think...
or if Mandela didn't die in, you know, South Africa, in a South African jail, then, you know, like, well, and it's like, is that an alternate reality? Or maybe it's just that you didn't remember it correctly, which is just as interesting in my book.
Well, it also
I think really has like important effects, or I guess important implications for, again, like we're talking about, you know, conspiracies and paranormal and UFOs and whatever, like, again, you know, a tremendous portion of the public, for whatever reason, believes and remembers a thing wrong. And it's a pretty insignificant thing, maybe, if you think about it, right, the name of these books. But that's still, like, that is a very interesting thing. And, you know, again, like, that is something that's easy to prove, right? Like, no, the books, like, we can go back in history and show that the books have always been called this, and you just were, you know, your brain was making, again, like, an easy change, you know?
Yeah.
Versus, like, you know, saying that, you know, imagine if the conspiracy was bigger than that, right? Like, no wonder it's easy for them to spread and be, just be out there everywhere. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, when people, again, say, like, you know, well, do you think that so many people would just be, could so many people just be wrong about seeing a UFO or about seeing a ghost or whatever? And it's like, Bernstein Bears, man. You know what I mean? Like, yes, like, people are wrong about stuff in...
For that, though, Chris.
Say it again,
Marie. What's that,
Marie? You know, like, what's the tipping point for that, though, Chris? Because it's like, it had to take a certain amount of people to believe that for it to actually catch into a consciousness that was like, yes, it was that, right? So I'm kind of like, that's the thing that's kind of interesting too. It's like, well, yeah, sure, I might remember that Jell-O wasn't hyphenated or some shit like that, and they never had, you know, they never had cherry flavor, they only had raspberry or whatever the thing is that you're remembering. But it takes a certain amount of people and a certain amount of momentum to make it into a Mandela effect. And that's what I think is kind of like...
Right. That's why I called
like
it... Yeah, that's why I called it like digital deja vu. There's like, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the shared reality, where it's like... it's almost like reality is being shaped constantly in a way that it wasn't really before. Because everyone's kind of participating in it in a way that they weren't before. It's hard to kind of put my arms around that, but I think you know what I mean.
That's actually really interesting and something I hadn't really ever thought of before, actually. Like what you're saying, like, you know, actually, as we were discussing that, I was thinking about that. Remember that stupid dress?
Yeah, yeah.
Like
that.
Some people thought it was blue. Some people thought it was yellow or whatever the hell it was, right? And...
Right.
That is actually like an example of that, where if there was, again, this is like the kind of crazy experiments we wish we could do on the show. And again, why I'm like one bad cheeseburger away from villainy, you know, if we were able to show that picture to 1,000 people who had never seen it, you know, 1,000 people just living on an island someplace who have never seen a computer before, we just showed them a picture of the dress and ask them what color it was, I wonder if we would get the same disparity in, like, 50% say it's blue, 50% say it's yellow, versus was it just one person saw it as yellow and then just suggesting that, no, this is a yellow dress, it made other people see it as yellow. You know, so it's more almost like a – again, like you're saying, like deja vu, Tim. It's like, again, it's a visual almost. It's almost like a visual meme, I guess, or a visual optical, like a socially constructed optical illusion. You know,
yeah.
And that's really like at the
end
of the day, a lot of this, right? Like with magic, the reason that like a magic trick works isn't always because you are being socially conditioned by the magician to, like, you know, we'll follow my hand over here, right? Whereas, you know, if you were just on without that person's input, you wouldn't necessarily be tricked by what they're showing you. Kind of the same thing. Like, it's a really and does social media make us more prone to those things? Because now there is a lot more input from people than we normally would get, right? Like, if in your normal life you never ask somebody, you know. We're back to stoner questions now, Tim. In your normal life, you never ask somebody, like, hey, man, do you see red the same way that I see red, right?
Yeah.
But that's
what
that stupid dress made us do. And for a lot of people, I think it was very kind of shocking. People were like, oh, crap, not everyone does.
Well, obviously, it set up a choice, right? It set up a binary choice, right? And I all of a sudden, I have an option. And by the way, Tim, like, excellent stoner question. Excellent stoner question.
Wow.
Yeah, very. That honestly is a hell of a question. We gotta think of a lame read to turn that into an episode. That's a really – it's honestly a very interesting
Yeah,
well, that's hella interesting, man.
You can apply the same thing to the Havana sonic weapon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Basically, it's like, well, you have a group of people that had this experience, but then all of a sudden they are being asked, did you have this? Did you have that? Did you feel this? Did you feel that? And they're like, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I did. So you already have colored or influenced a group of people on what this thing could do or what happened to them without any kind of context, without any kind of scientific baseline to actually go on. And then it just all of a sudden takes off.
It's funny, actually. Have you ever...
That is a fascinating thing.
Did you ever, either of you ever do, like, a study or a test of, like... I guess it's not really mental I don't really know what we would call it, but basically, like, there's like a psychological phenomena. So I talk about it on the show a lot and everything else, but so I have obsessive compulsive disorder. And so one of the symptoms is, like, not really being able to effectively, like, filter out mental, like, noise, basically. Right, so, like, every day when you're, like, walking around or whatever, you're having thoughts and you're humming to yourself and you're counting and whatever, right? Like, most people do those things. But for most people, that stuff is sort of, like, stuff you just ignore, right? But for someone with, like, OCD, it's harder to ignore those stimuli. And so so sometimes, like, you know, your brain will just kind of you'll just have a thought, and then you'll just kind of fixate on it, right? So the best example I guess I can give of it is, like, if you've ever had a song stuck in your head, right?
Yeah.
It's like that, but it's like with a thought, right? So it's like, you know, like I could push over that dumpster, right? That's like an innocuous thought that, like, people might have and just, like, whatever. Like, yeah, I could, whatever, right? But but for some people, they get stuck on that thought, and it becomes like, well, why am I having that thought? And all these other – a cascade of other thoughts happen. But anyways, but what's interesting, I think, or kind of really interesting is if the thought that people – if you were able to, I guess, sort of – I don't even know how to say it. I'm just going off on a random tangent. I'm just down a rabbit hole now that I can't explain. I'm just dead in the water.
No. It's the same. I totally get. I get what you're saying, and I'm not even stoned that you guys know. But I think like, it's the same kind of principle. It's like,
I guess what I was
going to
say is, have you
had and keep repeat? Like, I think that there is something to it that's sort of like, you know, again, it is sort of human nature, like. You have whatever, like, for me personally, it's like, if I have a question about something, and this happens in research all the time, something snags and I'll be reading and I don't even know what it is. And it just starts to bubble to the surface, And it's like maybe 2 days later or something that it comes full fledged. And it's like, that date was wrong. Why is that? Or, like, something was, like, something that I didn't see that didn't make sense. But while yours is more on, like, a repeat, mine is almost more like I feel it when I first see it, but then it's, like, it takes a couple of days to become an actual thing. And then I can't ignore it. And then I'm like, okay, I've got to go find out why this date was different than the rest of the dates or whatever it is.
I think that
kind of thing is one of the things that feeds into the idea of the Mandela effect.
What I was gonna say was, and I remember it now, thank God, because my brain would have been like, "What the hell were you trying to say?" Have you ever tried to not think about something?
Oh, it's impossible.
So what I mean is, okay,
yeah.
And so listeners, if you're listening to this now, right, try not to think about a red ball. Right, it's really hard. It's really hard to purposefully not think about something.
Yeah.
Your brain will just bring it up because you are in telling yourself to not think about something, you're thinking about it. Right? So there's like tricks you can do, right? Like you can focus on another thing or whatever, but still it's the input. It's the once it catches, you kind of have no control over it, you know?
Right.
And so it's the same thing, I think, with this, like with the Mandela effect or with these other things where, you know, again, people, I think, sort of, we all assume that our brains are like under our control all the time. That's, you know, and you are your brain, obviously, like there's no dichotomy between like you and your brain, but you are tricked a lot of the time by your brain, like stuff, you know, input that comes into your head
all the time,
is incorrect. Like, you know, we, I think as a species sort of have always overestimated our ability to like control what we see and what we think and whatever. But, you know, with social media and with these other things, that's, I think, kind of the most interesting part of what you suggested, Tim, is this idea of social media as a way to kind of see into someone else's thoughts, or the internet as a way to see into someone else's thoughts, and how that affects your own thoughts, right? And your own kind of perception of the world and then how you view it. I don't know. That was a good question, man. That's a good point.
That's going to be
a very interesting point, I think.
Now, Tim. We're going to beat that one to death. You're welcome.
There you go. Well, I recommended a series to Chris a while back. This question, it came up actually from the Dr. Howard Carter show, and I was thinking to myself, which is another one of these great series that you guys did on Mad Scientist Podcast. But do we, and I don't expect either of you to know this, but you may, because you guys are kind of like me, where I think that if something kind of popped in your head, you'd try and find it out, and then you remember it. And I haven't gone that far. I just had the question. But do we know, and I said this, I wrote Chris, I was like, you should do a show on this, because it seems up your alley based on the Howard Carter thing. But do we know, okay, now all that set up. Do we know who, like how they first found the dinosaurs? Like, who the fuck first dug up one of these things? Like, when did they put all this together? Because to me, that's kind of, like, crazy and fascinating and weird. Like, it had to have been some point, like, in the 1800s or something like that. Someone had to be the first person to dig up a dinosaur. And it was taking them a while to figure out what the fuck these things were.
I will tell you, Tim, that is an episode I am currently researching. Because we are going to do that episode.
Nice. All right.
They thought there were dragons before then, man. You know it.
Oh, I'm sure that was the case.
They'd be like, "Those are fucking dinosaurs. Those are fucking dragons." Well, I love that.
Yeah,
you know,
I bet that was
actually. So if you think about what part of the country they found dinosaurs, like what parts of America do they find dinosaurs in? Right. It is parts of the country that tend to be it's funny in America. Archaeology, kind of like archaeology proper, I guess, is its own sort of thing. But then there's also like religious archaeology out there. So I don't know if you guys have ever been to like in Pennsylvania, especially it's weird because like I never really thought of Pennsylvania as being like a particularly like religiously conservative area. Like they have the Amish, but you know, that's more of like a sideshow attraction than like a real, I don't know, cultural block. Right. But like, not to like belittle an entire people's like faith and identity, whatever. But they're not listening to the podcast.
You
it's fine.
You can reach
they're not...
Chris at Dr. Cog. No, you go ahead.
This idea of there being archaeology done with the purpose of like proving the Bible right.
When they first
found dinosaurs, they were like, "Oh, this is like Leviathan, or this is the beast that Job saw." Initially, almost the discovery of dinosaurs was like kind of a sideshow kind of thing. It wasn't really taken very seriously, and it was sort of a religiously tinged thing too at first, for some people anyways.
Well, imagine how crazy it would be to find that jawbone. I mean, that's like,
yeah,
that's
no,
like
it's,
you can imagine how that would have almost a religious or a fable or a lore to it just by finding something that huge. I mean, that would be crazy to have to, you know, to find and be like, and try and make sense of. If you've never heard of dinosaurs before, I could see why you would be like, well, yeah, that's that right there. That's Leviathan, or, you know, or the giant squid is Leviathan or Kraken or whatever. It's like those things seem, you know, natural history can have a definite, you know, if you decide to look at it in that way, can have a different plant. I can hardly
get totally.
That's going to be good.
Yeah, no, it totally changes when they first discovered dinosaurs. It basically totally changes our view of the Earth too, because you have to remember too that the time that they first discovered. So I think the first person to actually find a dinosaur bone was a clergyman. Like, I think he was a friar or something. So when they first discovered it, though. Yeah, the first one was by a guy named Robert Plott, and they initially thought that it was just a part of a giant human. They thought it was like giant. Because again, in the Bible they talk about giants, right, and giant beings or whatever. So it was like, well, where are the giants then? If you know, and so them all dying and us having the bones for them made a lot of sense. But you have to remember too that this was also at the time where, like, there was a huge fight going on between people who thought the Earth was 6,000 years old and those who thought it was older. And so the evidence of there being like animals that we have absolutely no records of in any historical documents, you know, that made a lot of that was quite a stir for. The like those in power of that debate, right? And one side of that debate really changed things quite quickly. So, and it also just like, you know, at that point too, we had thoughts about like how big something could get, right? And so today that it's like a limit. Today we know that there's a limitation on like the amount of oxygen you can get and how much you can like literally pump to muscle and stuff like that. But at the time, you know, we didn't know any of that, you know, so it was just like we haven't ever found anything that big, but you find a giant bone like that and you're like, crap, is this thing hiding, you know? But yeah, dude, it's funny.
Is there a giant
like Tim, you end up
come out,
I mean, you,
this bone
what's funny, Tim, is like you end up really with like when you watch, I mean, you know, a lot of those we talk about those ideas as if they're like crazy things, whatever, you know. Ancient Aliens has entire seasons practically dedicated to David Childress being like, there are giants out here, right? Like, that idea hasn't gone away. People still believe in giants.
People still believe in giants.
You know, it's still silly. A lot of it comes from, like, misidentification of fossils.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's crazy just to think about, like, they're so ubiquitous now that there was a time when there people didn't know about dinosaurs. It's like crazy to think about when you think about it that way. It's the world is always changing.
Yeah, man. I don't know. There was a time not that long ago that like none, you know, us, you know, we're three relatively smart, well-educated people. There was a time, you know, a hundred years ago. Us three knowing about like viruses or germs would have been, you know, impossible, right? Like we would have had to have been like medical doctors, like doing specialty research to know anything about like germs and viruses. Like, there's so much about the world around us that we take for granted. And again, this has happened at a rate. We're getting back to Ted Kaczynski now, and humans aren't ready for this technology.
You
know, it has come at us. It's at such a clip that it's like we talk about with animals having like their entire ecosystem destroyed and changed, and how disruptive that is for their species. we kind of never think about ourselves in those same terms, you know? But, like, the last 100, 200, 300 years have basically been, like, you know, taking a goldfish and throwing them into a completely new tank with with not even, like, water. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, I think it's a very interesting and important question to wonder, you know, like, what has that done to us? You know, we like to think of ourselves as more than our biology, but I still think, like, we're not that advanced, you know? So what has it done to us? What effect are we ready for this technology? Those sorts of questions. Should we live in the woods, Tim?
Yeah. Well, it's...
Those damn planes are so loud.
I think a big part of it, and I'll let you guys go in a moment, but, yeah, I think a big part of it comes back around to, like, we can kind of figure out almost every other part of the body, but the brain and the mind is still, like, the most difficult to wrap our heads around, no pun intended. And it's like, who knows, you know, since we don't understand it, we can't really grapple with sort of changes around us. We can't really kind of understand how it's going to affect people, you know, in that sense, I guess.
All we can do...
If we knew everything, it would be dumb.
Exactly.
Yes, all we can do is be humble in the fact that we don't know everything, right? Like, that's the only thing we can do to be sure that we're not being dogmatic and arrogant in the face of unknown, right? That's the only thing that we can do.
It comes back to what you say, Chris. It comes back to what you say. Just don't be a dick.
Right, don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
Come on.
Now, I'm not going to put you on the spot here, but I'll let you ponder this before I put it in the mail. That sounds creepy, especially given the context. But I want to write to the Unabomber, and I want to find out what that dirty limerick he wrote was that got him fired when he got into the fight.
Oh, my
with
God.
The lady, because I remember in the episode you guys mentioned, he had, like, a girlfriend, a quasi-girlfriend, and they split up, or she, you know, she didn't want to date him in the first place or something. I don't recall the exact circumstances. But he wrote a dirty limerick on the bathroom wall, and they fired him. And no one, and it's been lost to history. So I feel like if I wrote to the Unabomber, I'd be like, what is this dirty limerick you wrote? So before I write to the Unabomber, if you have any questions for the Unabomber, let me know. I'll let you know before I send him a letter. That would be a landmark podcast, because if I get a letter back, we'll all get together and read the letter from the Unabomber.
Not a package we're in.
Yeah, exactly.
I think dirty limerick is, like, honestly my number one question. It'd be dirty limerick and, like, no, it'd be dirty limerick. That's the top question. What was it?
Yeah,
what did you write, Sid?
That's not a bad one. We thought about writing them, too, because you got to write, you know, if you did, like, just yellow lined paper and pencil, you know, I'm sure that they're, you know, you could kind of sweet talk your way into a response from them like that. It'd be interesting. I bet he might. You never know.
Dear Ted, we've heard you smell like milk. Like, we also enjoy milk. What's that? Dear Ted, we also are worried about the rate of technological advancement in the modern age. Would you like to talk? Would you like to email back to us? Also, what was that dirty limerick you wrote to your coworker that made her get you fired? Totally normal. You're totally normal friends, Chris and Marie.
Oh, man. All right. I was reading up on that, too. I was looking into it, and it was like, yeah, they're like, the letters will all eventually be published someday, and some college has the rights to it, like, 50 years after he dies or something like that. It's like, so you'll essentially be in someone's, in the Unabomber archive for writing him a letter. Yeah. So that's, I have had to weigh that aspect of it, too. But, you know, I have seen a few letters that he has written back, and crazily enough, I think I mentioned this to Chris, he fucking recommends people get his book on Amazon. And it's like, dude, you sell out? Like, what the fuck, man? Like, really? So, really, there are real, like, letters from him where he's like, you can get my manifesto, you can get it on Amazon along with my other books, because he apparently has other books now.
Oh, see? see, like, what's going on in that bean? Like, what the hell is up with that? That's some weird shit, right? Could you, it's like Amazon is not the river, dude. Like, you don't have, like, you know, river dolphins delivering the book to me. It's actually a delivery service owned by a quadrazillionaire.
Fascinating character, because then you want to also be like, dude, if you just waited, you could have just put your manifesto on Amazon. Like, everyone's getting their manifesto out, dude. You wouldn't have been a problem if you just waited a little longer for the internet, you fucking nut. Oh, man. Anyway, what topics, or you want to tease any future topics that are coming up on Mad Scientist Podcast before we call it a night?
Yeah, we're going to do a series on like the invention of flight or airplanes and kind of the physics behind flight and how airplanes work. We're going to do one on forensic science, which should be a lot of fun. And the episode on dinosaurs, man, the series on dinosaurs is going to be a lot of fun too. So yeah, we got some good stuff coming up this season.
Nice, I'm looking forward to it. And Marie, you're still
topic.
Boner coffins, you say?
No, boner coffins would be great.
I was like,
more stoner topics. If your listeners have stoner topics that they would like us to dig into, by all means,
Stoner topics. Oh, all right. Stoner topics.
Send them along. Send them along, please.
Nobody needs that.
Boner coffins, yeah. Well, I thought that was some kind of like archaeology thing. So it was like, what is that? Like some inside archaeology joke. All right, Marie, you also have the podcast, Whatever Remains. And is that kind of like, do you have a plan for that? Or is that just kind of, you know, fly by night?
We're going to be finishing up Circleville. I actually have got a cold case that I might start to look into about a suicide that may be a murder. I'm even looking at a series on pirates. So a lot of fun things coming up. Just depends on which one of my Freedom Information Acts comes in first.
Nice. There you go. And, so that's Whatever Remains. And the website for you for the Mad Scientist Podcast is themadscientistpodcast.com. So, folks can go and check that out and subscribe and all that good stuff. So I feel like I could talk to you guys forever, so I'm definitely going to have you back on the show in the future. And I love this conversation. We really got into some deep stuff, and some might call them stoner questions, but, you know, we do what we can here on Friday nights. But I really did. I loved it. You guys made me think a lot, so thank you very much. I really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Tim, as always, it's a pleasure, man. Thanks for having us on, and we'd love to come back anytime.
Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. All right. Well, have a great night.
You too.
You too, babe. All right. Bye.
Good night. There you go. That was Dr. Chris Cogswell and Marie Mayhew from the Mad Scientist Podcast. That was awesome. I really enjoyed that conversation quite a bit. Really got into some deep stuff. I'm fascinated by that Unabomber case. So it's so strange. We'll keep you informed, folks, if we end up writing to the Unabomber. Now, if you're definitely listening to this on the MP3. So for the people who are now listening to that, so we had a chaos situation through our friends at Blog Talk, of course, last week, where I was like up and ready to roll out last week's Tyler Cook John show on the podcast feed on Saturday. And next thing you know, of course, Blog Talk like ate the episode and didn't spit it out till Monday morning. And then I have to work in the week, so it kind of would just wore me down all week that I couldn't get around to it. So you're listening to this now after that. So I figure we're stuffing your podcast feed, hopefully this weekend here, the first weekend in March. On next week's show, we're going to do something similar to tonight's show. Another podcast I'm a huge fan of, another podcasting tandem that I am a huge fan of. Now, you folks listening, you all are familiar with our good friend Aaron Gullius. He, of course, He, of course, of the Saucer Life podcast. So I'm going to have him on, and he's going to be doing something special. Joining me will be his co-host on Great Lakes Lore. Let me get Samantha's name up here. I apologize, folks. I did not plan this well at all. So, Samantha Engel, Aaron, as you know, he has the podcast Saucer Life, outstanding podcast. Sometime around the fall, he and Samantha teamed up to create a new podcast, a spinoff, if you will, of Saucer Life, that is Great Lakes Lore. And so we're going to have them on the show next week. We're going to talk about Great Lakes Lore and sort of like lore in general, I think. They've covered the Circleville letters, so we'll probably get into that a little bit. And stuff around the Midwest, stuff around the Great Lakes, strange and quirky kind of stories. I think people will dig it a lot. I love them quirky stories. So, yeah, Aaron Gullius and Samantha Engel, that's next week on the program. Great Lakes Lore, Saucer Life. That'll be what, March 11th? Same Banal time, same Banal channel, 9 p.m. Next Friday night. It'll be a lot of fun. And I think that's it. So I hope everybody has a great weekend, has a great week. And until next time, thank you to Zach Copley, Copples, in the chat room. Thanks to all the folks who listened live, and thanks to the folks listening on MP3 down the line. Much appreciated. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening.